This is the Jersey Rain Podcast with your host, Chris O'Mealy, starting right now.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the first Jersey Rain Podcast of 2016. I am your host, Chris O'Mealy. Yes, that's right. No chocolate rain intro this time. It's 2016. We're going to do something new. I want to thank you guys for continuing to tune in and support this show. Big shout outs to Giant Media Ball and Podcasts of Pennsylvania for being great allies. And of course to the Club Kayfabe community for supporting all of our shows. So please check out everything we have to offer and support all of your local podcasting friends. We got a fun episode this week. So big we had to split it into two parts. This is going to be part one of my interview with my good friend Matt Derline, the wrestling referee. He's going to tell lots and lots of stories, and it was too big for just one part, so he'll be back next week to tell even more stories. So check out this interview, and hey, thank you guys for the huge support for the Roundtable episode about Star Wars The Force Awakens. The Roundtable concept has been extremely popular, and thus we're going to be doing more of those in the future, so stay tuned for those. This week, though, we got Matt and all of his awesome wrestling stories, so stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jersey Rain Podcast.
All right, guys, it's time for the first Jersey Rain interview of 2016, not 2006, like some TNA wrestlers would have you believe. And speaking of wrestling, this is going to be our second ever wrestling-themed episode. So if you're not a wrestling fan, you're probably not going to like this one. But if you are a wrestling fan, who knows? Maybe we'll turn you into one by the end. I have no idea. We'll see how it goes. I am joined by my good friend, professional wrestling referee, Matt Derline of the wonderful Northeast Pennsylvania wrestling circuit and beyond. Matt, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, man, he's going into full radio mode right now. Fast talking everything.
So we don't need to go down that road, though eventually we probably will get there.
Yes. So Matt here is actually a wrestling referee. You know how when you guys watch wrestling matches, there's actually three people in the ring, but you don't generally notice the third guy? That's because he's doing his job. That's what pro wrestling referees do. So it's actually kind of cool to talk to somebody other than just the standard wrestlers we usually have on here. Well, Matt, let's talk about this wonderful business that we've been so fortunate to be a part of for all the ups and even all the downs, too.
What? Lots of downs, but a lot more ups than downs.
Well, more ups and downs, sure, but they are there. All right, so let's talk about you being a wrestling fan in general. What turned you on to the world of pro wrestling?
Professional wrestling is actually the only interest that my father and I have in common. So I grew up watching it with him. Went to a couple shows growing up as a kid. My first ever live show was an indie show.
Okay.
At the Christopher Columbus High School in Clifton, New Jersey, which now is not that school anymore. But it was like a June afternoon. It was in their football field, main evented by Don Morocco against Cowboy Bob Orton.
Nice.
It was really cool. And then actually the following week, WWF was at the Meadowlands with Warrior and Rude on top. So back when Warrior was the champion.
Okay.
So I grew up watching it because my dad was a fan. My dad would go in like the 70s and the early 80s to Madison Square Garden for the monthly cards.
Oh, so you actually got to see like Bruno Sammartino in his heyday.
Yes. Wrestling. In fact, I always tell people that if it hadn't been for Bruno Sammartino, I probably wouldn't be doing what I do now. Not because he's been a great influence on my career as a referee, but say Bruno doesn't stay hot in New York for so long. Maybe wrestling dies out and my father doesn't keep going. If my father doesn't keep going, I don't get into it. So
there you go. Okay, so who were some of your favorite wrestlers growing up as a kid?
Well, I was definitely more of a Warrior kid than Hogan. And looking back, I can't imagine how, as like an 8-year-old, I would think that the Ultimate Warrior was so cool because it was just such a mess.
You know, that's funny. That's how I feel, too, when I look back at it. I'm like, man, when we were kids, this was the coolest guy ever. I'm like, just imagine if we were a little older and we were watching these Warrior promos.
It's like the mid-90s Smash Mouth came out, and I really wanted to get the album because I really liked Walking on the Sun. And my mother would say, that is the dumbest song I've ever heard in my life, and I refuse to let you buy that because I don't want to hear that song over and over again in my house. And then like fast forward like 15 years, I hear it again. I'm like, wow, she's right. This is a really dumb song.
It is, but that was another song that defined us as kids.
Unfortunately. after Warrior had come and gone, I was definitely a Bret Hart fan.
As was I.
I evenly watched WWF and WCW. So I enjoyed Sting, who, of course, was the epitome of cool in 1989.
Oh, yes, of course. He had a rat tail. That was the haircut.
That was the thing.
Everybody I knew had a rat tail. I guess I was like the only kid who didn't have one, but I didn't have long enough hair to ever have a rat tail.
Well, whose fault is that, Chris? Come on.
I know, right? Damn genetics. So, yeah. So you've become a big fan. You're liking these guys. So what steers you in the direction to being a referee as opposed to actually doing the wrestling?
I didn't think I was cut out for wrestling physically.
Yeah, that's why I became a ring announcer, so I relate to this.
I didn't think I'd be able to hack it, and an opportunity came up. Well, let's backtrack. I actually started out as part of an underground wrestling promotion, unlicensed, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, called Valley Championship Wrestling.
Oh, I have totally heard these stories before.
And it was back in the day of when AOL Instant Messenger was hot, and you would just look up people in your area and IM them at random. At least I would, because I was a really awkward kid. And one of the people that I had actually randomly IM'd worked for VCW. So I went down there and I met everybody. And from there, I was going to train to wrestle, and it was right at the end of the spring semester of my freshman year of college at King's in Wilkes-Barre. So I was going to be back home in the Poconos, and I wasn't going to drive up here twice a week to train, or however much it was. So I figured I'd wait till September when I got back to school. And then I fell into doing other stuff, like production stuff. I was writing for their website. And eventually, I did referee one match there before the company folded.
Nice.
And then, to fill the void of the underground wrestling in Wilkes-Barre, because a lot of the guys, after that, went and got officially trained and became indie workers. But there are a lot of us who were left behind. So I actually, with the help of a couple people, opened an underground promotion myself. I ran out of the same building. At that point, Club Home Base in South Wilkes-Barre, called the UWF. And that ran for a little bit, and I did wrestle there. Poorly. Very poorly. So that we eventually shut down as well. And I fell into going to World Star Wrestling shows.
Yes, Johnny Glitter's promotion.
Yes, because Matt Turner had trained there, and Danny Rage had trained there. So we went down, and using my intern badge from the local radio station, Glitter actually sent me out as someone that people had heard of on the radio, sent me out to be the MC for the show, like do a show intro. And from there, because we just went to watch Turner and Rage have their debut match, and we wound up backstage. And the Hardcore Mafia was working there, and a whole bunch of people that we knew were on these shows. So I fell into World Star and was ring announcing. I did some managing work. The referee thing didn't happen until I was finishing. I decided I was going to try to train to wrestle. It was at the Zoo in Wilkes-Barre under Eric Pinhat. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't working out for me. But I would still go and work out in the ring and stuff. And an opportunity had come up at Groundbreaking Wrestling in Hanover, Pennsylvania. They needed a ref. So I was recruited to do so because I had been working out in the ring and knew the basics of being a referee. So we drove to Hanover, Pennsylvania. It was September 2004, and I'll never forget this. We loaded literally 9 people in Irish Kev's minivan. Irish Kev was a dude who wrestled at the time as ring crew number 1. He eventually went on to become Coach Leroy Skull, mostly in GSW, but also in EPWE Underground in Allentown. So if you've seen him around, if you're a wrestling fan, that's who we're talking about here. We loaded like 9 of us into his minivan to drive to Hanover, Pennsylvania. And I'm the only referee on the show. They're not able to. I'm filling in for somebody. They don't have anybody else. We're driving up the hill into Hazleton, and Kes Vance starts acting real funny. So we get off the highway at West.
It's Hazleton. Not a wrestling road trip story unless something happens to the car.
Oh, definitely not. So, thankfully, it doesn't happen all the time. But this was the epic failure of cars. I don't know how we still made it to the show, but we did. So we get off the highway at West Hazleton, pull into a gas station, and there's a dude working with us at that point, Steve Strasser. He had trained under Eric at the Zoo. He had a couple matches here and there in the indies. He was mostly working as this gimmick, Ring Crew Mask, like Tiger Mask. He was Ring Crew Mask.
Okay, so he was a Ring Crew guy wearing a mask.
Yes. Oh, yeah, I should probably explain. The Ring Crew, they were literally just guys in white t-shirts and jeans, and they were the Ring Crew. They were building the ring. That was their gimmick.
But they were also kind of living that gimmick, too.
Uh-huh.
I've built many a ring, but I can't say I ever worked as the ring crew on the show.
No. that literally what belongs just to Kevin Eric.
Yes.
So we get off the highway at this gas station, and Strasser opens the hood, checks the oil. And the oil's low. So Kev's like, oh, I have oil. Goes and Strasser just starts to pour the oil into the spout gimmick. And the rest of us are still in the van. So we could see, you know, the little crack in between, like when you open the hood of the car, you can still see from inside the car, like under that little crack there. So we just hear Pinhat say, guys, we need to get out of the van. I'm like, oh, why? He goes, because it's on fire.
And knowing Pinhat, how I know him, I can hear him saying that so casually, too.
Because it's like, on fire.
Yeah, guys, it's on fire. We need to go.
So there's a ton of us in this van. Like, Vin Gerard and Shane Storm are with us on this trip trying to get on the show. And may have actually done so if we hadn't been derailed by a van being on fire. Uh-huh. So Kev does the only sensible thing he could think of. Well, Strasser is blowing on the fire.
Of course, because that's how you put out a fire in a car.
Trying to kind of blow out the fire. The oil fire now. So Kev goes into the gas station. Has to wait in line for a second. Walks up to the girl at the counter. Hi, I need your fire extinguisher. The girl just stares at him. So Kev looks and goes, now? And she's like, oh, right. She gets him the fire extinguisher. He puts out the fire. So we're going to be here for a while. It's a really chilly September day. Like, really windy. Now we're at the top of a mountain. That makes it worse. And out of nowhere, this pickup truck pulls in. We don't know these people. This pickup truck with South Carolina license plates pulls into the gas station and sees us doing whatever.
Blowing trying
to get,
fires.
Trying to get and... going. And they look at the van. They're like, y'all boys need help? Like, uh-huh.
yes, please.
So they leave the van, and there's a loose hose, which is making the car sputter and making Kev lose power. So he didn't need oil at all, really, probably. So they look at these guys, and they go, okay, hop in. So Kev and Strasser get in the bed of their pickup truck, and they just drive away. Now, because I wasn't there, I can't speak to all the stories, but let's just say these guys had moonshine in their truck.
That's awesome.
And they said that the girls around here, quote, aren't corn-fed. That's a direct quote from these South Carolina guys.
Yes. So South Carolina essentially just put down NEPA.
Yeah. Well, the South will rise again. But...
Oh, yes, of course they will.
So they take Kev and Strasser to the parts store. They get the hose we need. We fix it in the parking lot. And we're on our way to Hanover. I work 9 matches that night by myself.
It's always
and
fun.
And then there's actually, earlier that week, there had been a hurricane. and our river was flooding.
What year was this? 04?
04.
What hurricane hit in 04? I don't even remember. Because I was living in North Jersey at the time, so.
Well, we got, like, the remnants of the hurricane or something. I don't know, but it was enough rain to where they actually shut down all the bridges but one in the valley.
Oh, that's great.
And put up the flood walls. To give you some perspective of how our levee system works here, Hurricane Agnes in 1972, the river got up to 40.9 feet. So they built a levee. And they built the levee to 41 feet.
Of course. Because it'll never flood higher than that.
Exactly. It'll never, ever, ever. 40.9, that's the highest it'll ever be. But the city of Wilkes-Barre, they put these walls up. They walk off the bridges with these like steel walls. And they closed all the bridges. That's part of the levee system. Except for the bridge on the Cross Valley Expressway. So it's the only bridge we could get across. And I lived on the west side of the river. And the show was not on the west side of the river. So now we're 3 hours from home. We're all getting phone calls. Hey, they're closing the bridges. But we're in the middle of a show.
Yep.
So if there were ever an introduction to the refereeing end of the wrestling business, the wrestling was incidental at this point. But it was quite the introduction to wrestling road trips, to say the least.
You know, it's funny because it reminds me of my first actual wrestling road trip when we drove up to Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania, and we all lost cell service. And this was 2005, so it's not like it's not like we would have been sunk necessarily because everybody was relying on cell phones. But at the same time, I was like, so what happens if we break down? Are we just screwed? And my brilliant crew that I had in the car with me at the time was Mike Simsack, the timekeeper, and referee Charles Hardman. So if we broke down, we may have actually been screwed.
Your crack team of experts.
Yes, my expert crack team. That's who's in the car with me. And my buddy Chris used to come with me to early World Star shows to like just to help out and be part of the crew and like hang out. And this was the one show he wasn't part of. And I'm like, man, I could. And he's an engineer. He went to school for engineering. I'm like, man, this is the one time he's not in the car with me. This is when something's going to go wrong. Fortunately, nothing went wrong. But that's like hearing that story from you now is making me think back to that and going, oh, man, that could have been 18 kinds of bad.
There's a place we used to go, Turner and I was on the road with Matt Turner for like 46 of the 52 weekends in 2005, I think. And there's this place we used to go. What was it? What was the name of that? Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania. It's this little remote town on the Maryland border that was only one road to get into. And it was so remote that we actually had to take the highway into Maryland, get off the highway, and then take the one road into Blue Ridge Summit.
That's awesome. That you have to change states just to get into this town.
Where's your show today? Blue Ridge Summit, Pennsylvania. Oh yeah, how do you get there? Go to Maryland?
And then go back to Pennsylvania.
But this is that kind of town where it had like half a functional traffic light and a third of a gas station. And it was like
the third of a gas station.
It's one that, like when Ned Flanders knows, was it Flanders that finds the gas station that's like 103
oh yeah, Donnie's discount gas. He's being chased by Jimbo, Dolphin, Kearney on their mini bikes because he asked them to vamoose. That's the one where Marge becomes the listen lady.
Yes.
This is the listen lady. All right. Well, listen, lady. Yes, we're both huge Simpson fans, in case you guys couldn't tell.
But it was that kind of town with like a third of a gas station where it'd be like 0.7 cents for the gas instead of 0.9 cents, just because.
Because we can.
And we were always kind of scared to go there. One, because it's in the middle of nowhere. And two, because it's in the middle of nowhere. But it's a company that we had worked for like a million times. They had run out of Delaware before, too. It was Maximum Championship Wrestling. They had Turner wrestle Christopher Daniels there. They had him wrestle Sanjay Dutt there. So they had him do a lot of stuff. They had a lot of
he got to work actual names.
Yes. But we went to a town like that before. And from there, from this Hanover story, the refereeing really took off.
That's awesome. So I need to find this town because I live in Lancaster. I'm only an hour north of the Maryland border. So I kind of want to find this little town now. And
it's not really near you. We had to like go through Gettysburg to get there.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's not really near me.
No, that's not at all.
Oh, that's great, though. I just love the fact that there's a town that exists in one state so remote that you have to go to another state to get to the town.
I want to know who thought, hey, let's put wrestling here.
Well,
who can get there? No one.
Well, I've seen that with a couple of venues. I used to work on the World Star circuit for Johnny Glitter. He would find these random towns that no one's ever heard of at these random buildings in the middle of nowhere where, like, we'd be in the back of Justin Glory's car, and he's like, guys, I legitimately don't know where we are, and I grew up in this area. We're just like, oh, well, this is good, and, you know. And with his crack team, it was just me and John Salinas. So, you know, we're like, well, we'll assist you if something goes wrong, but we might, you know, we might not be the best case for this, especially because we would be following the World Star bus, and that's what we were worried about. Not Glory's car breaking down. We were worried that the World Star bus was going to break down, and then what would we do?
Oh, the World Star bus.
World Star bus was great.
I always forget that World Star had a bus. And also jackets that said mathematically correct.
Yes. Yes, they did. Well, I used to, when I worked my my early World Star shows, I was always one of the main ring crew guys, so I spent a lot of time in the back of that bus passing things out to other people, passing parts of the ring out, and so you get to kind of become acquainted with the bus. The only thing I know about that bus is that Jimmy Snuka yelled at Jason Porter and Glitter Jr. for not being focused during a match in the middle of a highway at 4 a.m. while they were trying to sleep. And kept screaming, you gotta focus, brother, you gotta focus. And Porter's just like half awake, like, uh-huh, uh-huh.
We once went to, because we had done Fernwood for Glitter a couple times. And they had an after party at this sketchy biker bar in Marshall's Creek. Now, keep in mind, when we got there, Snuka offered Pinhat his beer at 11 a.m. It was also November, and Snuka came in barefoot. So
that's great.
So we worked the show, and then we go to the sketchy biker bar. And we're all hanging out, and as we start to head back, because we had the villas for the weekend. And we're driving back, and out of nowhere, this car with New Jersey plates, it's going like 70 down 209, which is not safe.
No, not at all.
And we come to realize later that it was Snuka passing us on the highway.
Later, brothers.
At like 2 a.m.
Oh, that's great. Don't you love it when you get that jerk on the highway that passes you, and then you find out, like, you pull into the venue and you see the jerk's car. You're like, oh, it's somebody working the show. And then you find out it's a Hall of Famer.
I have a reverse story like that.
Oh, this should be good.
A couple of years ago, my wife Ashley and I were going to a wedding. Like, I think 2014. And it was down in, down along the beach in Central Jersey. So we're driving down the parkway, and then we get on this road to head down there, and we pass this food truck, the Oink and Moo Barbecue.
That's great.
And Ashley's like, wow, that sounds delightful. Forget the wedding. Let's see where this food truck's going. So we don't do that for very long, because, you know, it's a food truck. It's not going very quick. So we get to the wedding, we pull in, and within 5 minutes, who pulls in behind us but the Oink and Moo Barbecue? Because the food truck was the caterer for the wedding.
That is fantastic.
Ash is like, yes, we win today.
That had to be an amazing wedding.
It was pretty cool. It was very cool. And yeah, it was a food truck catered wedding.
And not just any food truck either.
No. But the one that we passed on whatever highway that was after we got off the parkway.
The Oink and Moo.
She made up a song about it. I don't really remember it, though. It was, like, to the tune of Old MacDonald.
Oh, God.
The Oink we were in the car for a while.
Yeah, I've been, well, you know, because we've both been on long wrestling road trips, you just start doing stuff to amuse yourself. My favorite thing when we would do road trips, when me and Salinas would take a long road trip to, like, go work a show in Rhode Island or something, and we'd be driving back at 4 in the morning, and John's like, I'm in a hurry to get back, but I don't want to get caught by the cops. So he would wait for a car to pass us on the highway, and then he would go as fast as that car was going. Like, John, that car's going, like, 120. He goes, I know, but the cops will get him first. I'll just go 115. They won't catch me. I'm like, oh, that's awesome logic. Well, okay.
That's such a John Salinas thing.
Well, he got us home in a decent amount of time, and we didn't die, so silver lining?
Shrug?
Shrug. So you have worked a lot of different promotions. You probably can't even remember all of them at this point.
Well, I do have my book.
That's right. You actually, you did the thing that I wish I did when I started ring announcing, which I actually did do for a while, but then somewhere along the line lost track, where you kept track of everywhere you've worked and all the matches you've reffed.
Yes, and the book's in the other room right now, and if I go in the hallway, there's a good chance I'll wake my daughter up from her nap.
Yes, it's okay. Maybe we can talk about that next time you come on the show, but you've worked for tons of different promotions. Let's talk about, off the top of your head, what have been some of your favorite promotions to work for, and why?
Well, I'll start with the ones I work for presently, which I love all of them. Of course, Grand Slam Wrestling, right here in Northeast Pennsylvania, formerly in Northern or Western New Jersey, yes, I should say.
I know. I started it in Jersey, so I remember.
Well, I'm telling the listeners, not you. I know you know.
Garden State Wrestling became Grand Slam Wrestling, which was brilliant because John didn't have to change anything. He didn't have to change the initials. He didn't have to change the logo.
Well, we were sitting here because when we moved to Pennsylvania, I was the booker. And I was like, if we're going to start running shows in Pennsylvania, we can't really be Garden State Wrestling. So I had come up with Grand Slam Wrestling. I was like, it's still GSW, so we don't have to change much. John's like, that's fine. There's a while where Andy Hedder and I had jokes going back and forth about what we could change GS to in Grand Slam Wrestling. I wish I could remember them all, but I'm sure they were good. Because Hedder's really ridiculous.
Yes.
He's one of the most ridiculous people I know.
Yeah, he's a funny guy. I enjoy working with Hedder.
Oh, definitely. He will text me the most random stuff. Like, there's an auction that he goes to with Gary from Smart Mark Video.
Nice.
On a regular basis. He lives in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And there is an auction that he and Smart Mark Gary will go to. And they bid on the most random stuff. He won a Japanese pinball machine? A Japanese slot machine.
A pachinko machine?
No, it's just the writing's in Japanese.
Oh, okay. Japanese slot machine.
No, I mean, like, its point of origin is Japan, and it's a slot machine.
That's so cool, though.
He goes, I'm not going to bid any more than $75 for this. I'm like, that's $75 more than I would bid. So, I mean.
Yes, but now he can tell everybody that he owns a slot machine from Japan.
He buys the weirdest stuff, but he'll text me all these, like, random things. He works as a beverage distributor for one of the major soda companies.
Right.
He's like the guy you see in the supermarket bringing in the cases. Some of the things he sees in stores are just ridiculous. But I work for GSW. I've been there for 5 or 6 years now. And I very much enjoy it. I work for WXW C4, formerly just WXW, but then often moved to Florida. Well, no, that's what happened.
Yeah, he moved to Florida. I know he did. People were messaging me when I was living in Florida, and they're like, "Hey, you can remember how you said you always wanted to try to work for AFA?" I'm like, "Yeah." They're like, "Well, now you can. He's moving to Florida." I'm like, "Okay." because in the whole state of Florida, that doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily find him.
He runs in Orlando.
Yes, but I never ended up working for him.
Well, that's unfortunate, because working for Pops was always great. And when he moved, he took WXW with him. But Samu is still here and opened WXW C4, and I've been there. It'll be 10 years in December.
It's crazy.
That I've been with WXW. And I always enjoy going there. Always a good time. I also work for Excite Wrestling in Binghamton.
Yes, which... I've never actually been up there, but I've heard a lot of great stories come out of Excite.
Oh, Excite's a blast. It's an absolute blast. It's always fun. And then I also work for True Wrestling in Berwick, Pennsylvania, which is the remnants of highly competitive wrestling that ran out of Hazleton.
Okay. Who runs that one?
That is run by a couple of the different Berwick guys that wrestle.
Okay.
I don't want to, like, out them as the guys.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay.
But that they're always fun, too. We'll be back there. They run this little Salvation Army. And it doesn't hold a lot of people, like 7,500 people tops. And they're going to have Shane Douglas there next month, which is really cool. In this tiny little gym. And Ashley, my wife, grew up in Berwick. And she's like, wow, they're running in that gym? She goes, I played volleyball in that gym as a little kid.
Nice.
I would go to church camp in that gym. So like, it's really cool, at least for me, to have that come full circle. Like, my wife grew up going to that building, and now I work shows there. Previously, I was a referee for 3 years for Chikara.
That's actually a major promotion.
Yes. It was not as major back then. It's between 2004 and 2007. You had asked off air if I had ever had a gimmick name, and there I did. It was actually once I left Chikara that I dropped the gimmick name and just started working as Matt Durline.
Gotcha.
My gimmick name was Matt Dillon.
Of course it was.
Well, was that... here's why. So at the time when I first started in Chikara, when I first started reffing, I should say, when I first started in the business, really, because even back in 2002, when I was in college, I was working at this place. I had a job as a debt collector.
And you were one of those guys.
I was. It was terrible.
I can imagine.
I once had someone tell me that Cuba won the American Civil War on the phone.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to come to that right now, because that's a great story. We would collect for Thompson Education Direct, which at this point is now Penn Foster College. But at that point was one of those go-to-college-by-mail places.
Okay.
And you would see the commercials, typically in the middle of the night, like, you could train to be a mechanic or a dentist. Just call that. We'll send you the pamphlets. It was one of those places.
I remember those places. Our age is showing right now.
Yes. And their offices were actually right up the street from this debt collection place in Scranton. So we wound up collecting. They were one of our major companies that we collected for. So I called this guy. He was like in Alabama, I think. And he hadn't paid for his Thompson Education Direct. I'm going to try and keep this as clean as I can, because this definitely becomes an expletive fest here.
Oh boy.
For the guy I call. Hello, sir. I'm calling today about your debt with Thompson Education Direct. F you.
Oh, okay.
I go, excuse me? He goes, you heard me. F you. At this point, I, in my Matt Dillon collecting persona, I now know I'm not getting paid on this call. So the gloves come off. And I say, sir, I understand that Alabama's like 49th in the country in education. But you have to have a better vocabulary than that.
Oh, man.
And he says, and I quote, at least I ain't a damn Yankee.
Okay. Good comeback. Okay.
So I go, sir, who won the war? And he goes, probably those damn Cubans.
Probably those damn Cubans.
So I stop. I collect myself. I go, I want to make sure I got this right. You're telling me that Cuba won the American Civil War. just goes, and he hangs up real quick. So that is where Matt Dillon was born, as a debt collector in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
That is fantastic.
So I worked for Chikara for 3 years before they were a major. Like, they were up and coming. But it was before it was really what it is today.
Gotcha. Yeah, now they actually have become a very major independent promotion. And in our the wrestling podcast I do, Club Kayfabe, which you're familiar with because you've been on before, yes. we do our end of year awards. And one of the things I put up for best moment of the year was the fact that Kimber Lee won their Chikara Grand Championship, and that's the first major independent promotion to have a female be their top champion.
Oh yeah, she's a real good kid, and like she works real hard. She's a great worker, and it's a really great moment in general to do so.
Yeah, it's in wrestling in general, and like it was cool because that happened after the best match of the year of 2015 was Sasha Banks versus Bayley, which is crazy to think about how women's wrestling is evolving. But you know, that's the direction the industry is going in. They're
which one? Because with having a 2 year old, I don't get to listen to really any podcasts.
Yes.
which one did you guys vote as the better match, Brooklyn or the Iron Woman?
The Brooklyn one, because
okay, yes,
and because because I'm sure you do the same thing. We look at matches very differently now. We're looking at not just the wrestling that goes into it, but the crowd interactions, the spots in general, with the psychology, the emotion, the storytelling, and to me, the Brooklyn match had everything. Because as good as the Iron Woman match was, it didn't have the same emotional impact where Bayley won the title.
That's right. And here's the only thing that I think could discredit, and I'm not going to go out and say what the best match of the year was. You can make a strong case for Sasha and Bayley. The only thing that hurts it a little bit for me is that you knew Bayley was winning the title.
That's true. But they had also built it up to that point where if she didn't win the title, it would have been very disappointing.
Oh, absolutely. But with Sasha getting called up and them following the Sami Zayn storyline, the road to redemption.
Right.
You knew she was going to win, which is not necessarily a bad thing. Logical storytelling is a great thing. When a company follows the path and gives you, sometimes it's okay to give people what they're expecting. It really is.
Oh.
And this was one of those times.
Yeah. Well, I think about, there are some times when it's really shocking, and two recent examples I can think about in the world of wrestling. One of them I was actually there for, the first John Cena Rock match in Miami.
Okay.
Everybody thought that was just going to be a cheap Cena win. So when The Rock actually won, not only did they do the thing you weren't expecting, but they gave, at least the fans in Miami for sure, they gave the fans exactly what they wanted at the same time. So that was a huge eruption in emotion. Everybody went home happy. I think another perfect example was when everybody thought CM Punk was leaving the company. And they're just like, oh yeah, he's not going to beat Cena for the title. And then he did, and he ran off with the belt.
That was really cool. I actually remember that night I was out with some friends. There's a sports bar down in Bethlehem. That was one of the blast areas. And man, going to blast areas is wacky. There were people, like, the opener was one of the Money in the Bank matches, and there were people in the bar, adults. This is during the Cody Rhodes brown bag gimmick.
Oh God, I remember that.
That in the bar were wearing the brown bags over their heads. And I look at my friends like, what is going on here? I just worked a show. Because we had done WXW Sports Fest that afternoon, and then we just went right across town to go watch this. I look at my friends and go, am I just tired from working the show today, or is that really happening over there?
No, those are grown-ass adults wearing brown paper bags on their heads.
To support a show that they're not at.
That's great. Dude, I used to get a kick out of going to like Hooters or wherever that was showing the event to watch it. But there was that point where it got really annoying because I hate to come down this way, but I know you can feel the same way and most people in the business do. There's a certain point where you start becoming intolerant of wrestling marks.
Yes.
And we've all hit that point and we've all been there before.
We went to Hooters once for a pay-per-view. It was the Hooters in Boston. It was me and Irish Kev. We had gone up that weekend to see the Dropkick Murphys. It was St. Patrick's Day weekend. It was WrestleMania 20. And we had seen the Murphys twice that day. We got tickets for free for the afternoon show. And then we went to the early evening show and then booked across town to Hooters for WrestleMania. And the thing I'll always remember, two things. One, everyone was so into it that I couldn't wait to work shows in Massachusetts. And then when I finally did, it was awesome.
Nice.
Two, I remember Kev goes to use the bathroom. He comes back and he goes, ask me what happened while I was in the bathroom. I go, do I really want to know? He goes, yeah, ask me.
You know what I love about this? That's exactly how Kev starts a story, too. Not, guess what happened to me? Ask me what happened.
So, okay, fine, Kev. What happened in the bathroom? He called back to me the last five spots in the match. And before I could really react, he goes, yeah, there's TVs in the bathroom. He was amazed by this.
Well, he didn't miss a moment.
But getting to work in Massachusetts was really cool. There's this place we'd go to. It was Collision Pro Wrestling was the name of the company. Based out of Lowell and then the Boston area. There's actually a dude I work shows with at WXW, Anthony Green, who lives in Boston, who has some of these shows on DVD that he's supposed to be giving me for like 2005 when we'd go up there. And it was probably one of the coolest buildings I ever worked a show in. It was like Dave and Buster's before there was Dave and Buster's.
Nice.
It was called the Good Times Emporium in Somerville, Mass. It was just on the when you watch the shows at the TD Garden, and they always show the bridge right outside.
Yeah.
The building's like right on the other side of that bridge.
Oh, nice.
And you get in there, they have literally like 60 bowling lanes. And like there's a room with like 200 pool tables. They have indoor bumper cars and all sorts of really old original arcade machines. Like it's the coolest place. It's not there anymore.
Oh, that's sad because I would totally take a trip just to check that out.
We get up there. As me and Turner and Vin Gerard would drive up, or me and Turner and Anthony Franco. And we get there, and we're walking around with Cheech and Cloudy. And Cloudy just goes, do we have to wrestle tonight? or can we just do this instead?
That's exactly how I probably would have reacted, too.
And then we found, like, the original Mortal Kombat 2 machine and, like, WWF Superstars. That's one, right?
So goodbye quarters.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. Like, I think all of our pay was spent playing arcade games.
Yes. Hey, here's can we get paid for the show in advance? Why? Because.
Do you know where we are? Like, yes.
Do you even know where you're booking this thing? That sounds like so much fun. That would have been such a great time because I probably would have wasted all of my show pay on the same thing.
Oh, definitely. Like, keep in mind, we're in our mid-20s at this point, and this is what we're doing.
Yeah, even if my pay was only $5 for announcing, it would have been gone.
Oh yeah,
it would have been eaten back up by the machines. I'm like, you might as well have just given me. Like money that you pulled out of the machine at this point because it's going right back in.
Hi, can I have my pay in quarters, please?
Yes, can you please pay me in Chuck E. Cheese tokens? If you're working a show at a Chuck E. Cheese, that's what you want to get paid in, right?
So moving on.
What was the original point of this story?
You're asking me about promotions I've worked.
Yes, okay.
But most of the other promotions I've worked for have just been, like, the smaller local promotions. I have done work with CZW, more yes. So on the on the NBA side, Maven Bentley Association, the charity shows.
Right. But that's actually pretty cool, because Combat Zone Wrestling is another very well-known big indie promotion.
Let me tell you about there are two times I was actually booked for CZW.
Oh, boy. You didn't have to take a staple gun to the head, did you?
No, I actually did not wind up working either time.
Okay.
So Maven Bentley is one of my favorite people in this business. There's stories that I won't tell, but these stories have shown me what a stand-up guy Maven Bentley is. He's a real good dude. It's like 2005, and like the height of my working for Chikara, and he calls me back. Like, he's calling me on my home phone.
Oh, man.
Think about that. Like, let's put this in perspective here. I had a home telephone in my apartment.
Yes, because, yeah, 2005, that was, like, my infant cell phone at that point.
Yeah, same here. Like, prepaid, only, like, to call Ashley to have her call me back, because she had an actual cell phone plan and I didn't.
Nice.
But, so she could call me after 9 in the minute to be free. She was out in Clarion at college. So I'd get home from work and be like, hey, I'm home. And then she'd call me back on my landline. So Maven calls me. Hey, Matt, what are you doing on this day? Look at my calendar. Nothing. He goes, okay, well, I have CZW for you if you want. Okay, cool. Where's it at? He tells me where it's at. Okay, so I'll mark that down for you. He goes, okay, cool. Oh, by the way, it's Tournament of Death. Gotta go.
It's what? What?
He just hears me go, whoa, 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 whoa. So he doesn't hang up. And he goes, okay, so let's talk about this. He goes, I'll understand if you don't want to do it. But definitely take some time to think about it, and we'll have you come in. So I call Ashley. Hey, Maven called. Well, that's real cool. What did he want? He booked me for CZW. Oh, that's cool. You've been trying to get in there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's Tournament of Death. She goes, absolutely not. So I was like, let me do some research on this.
Did she know what Tournament of Death actually meant, or was she just basing that off the name?
At that point, it was just the name. But then we discussed what it was, and she's like, you're not doing that. So I was like, let me do some research first and see what goes into this. I'll probably be safe. So I called Bryce Remsburg, because I had been in Chikara with him, and I know he had done Tournament of Death. I called Bryce. Like, hey, dude, tell me about working Tournament of Death. Maven just called me. He's like, oh, Tournament of Death is great. You can wear whatever protective gear you want. You're not getting hit with anything, and you make out pretty well. So I waited until Ashley. I gave her a couple days. So I call her back. Well, we're talking a couple days later. I was like, well, I talked to Bryce, and he told me that it's not bad. She goes, well, I really don't want you doing it, but if you can be as protected as you want to be, then fine. So I call Maven, and Maven's like, yeah, Zandig's doing it. We don't need you.
Okay.
It's like, so the second time I'm booked for CZW, it's 2007-ish, I want to say.
Okay.
2008? I don't know. It's after I'm out of Chikara. I get the call from Maven, come on down. We're in Vineland, New Jersey. It's an afternoon show. Saturday afternoon. All right, cool. I'll be there. I drive down to Vineland, New Jersey. This show is in the backyard of a topless bar.
Nice.
It's advertised as Rain or Shine. And we get, like, literally a monsoon. Like, 3 inches of rain in the night.
Nice.
And that they wind up canceling the show for obvious reasons.
Yeah, because rain or shine, that's great and all, but
but not this kind of rain.
No, this is we're gonna drown rain.
And I remember I was stuck under a pop up tent during this month. Like, I didn't go inside. I don't know why, but I didn't go inside. and I'm stuck under this pop-up tent with Danny Havoc, John Dahmer, and Chrissy Rivera.
Like, oh, man.
The most random assortment of people that I don't really know. I don't really know any of them. I met Havoc a couple times because he had been through Chikara in Young Lions Cup.
Right.
But other than that, like, I don't think I knew John Dahmer. I don't think I'd ever met Chrissy Rivera, like, any of these people. And, like, we're just chilling under this tent with, like, torrential flooding rains falling on us. And the only other thing I remember of that day is I pull up and the ring is up, or we're getting the ring up, and they put the ropes up. And then they take the ropes down and start putting up barbed wire. And I'm like, what did I get myself into here? And then the show got canceled. But working for MBA was always really cool. Maven's a great guy.
Yeah, I never had the never actually met him before.
I recommend him to anybody.
That's cool. All right, so you've been all over the independent wrestling circuit. You've worked tons of different states, tons of different promotions. So I'm going to go ahead and put you on the spot. What are some of your favorite stories coming out of working for indie wrestling for all these years? Because I know you've got a ton of them.
Oh, yeah. We've discussed this. Let me take a look here at my phone and see what kind of time we have. We're doing all right.
We might have time for one or two stories this time.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, so I have to look at this list and narrow it down to one or two?
Well, what's your... You have to have a favorite.
Okay. Probably one of my favorite stories is working for ECPW. We are at Big Wheel in East Stroudsburg. And a lot of my stories come from Big Wheel in East Stroudsburg because I worked for a couple different companies there.
Okay.
And the ECPW one, this is very brief, but it's very funny. So Skinhead Ivan is on the show, who's now just Crazy Ivan. And he winds up working twice. He works Anthony Franco, the hometown guy in the main event. And before intermission, he works Rorschach from Chikara. I didn't know Rorschach was on the show, so that was pretty cool to see him and everything. So we're in the back calling the match. I'm like, hey, guys, what's the finish? And Ivan goes, I'm going to hit him with the gas mask and get DQ'd. Oh, okay, cool. Thanks. We get out there. We're working the match. Ivan brings the gas mask in the ring, hits Rorschach with it. I call for the bell. Rorschach gets busted open hard way with the mask. And we get in the back. Ivan says to me, you saw me hit him with the mask. I said, yeah. He goes, well, why'd you do that? I said, because that was the finish. And he says to me, well, you weren't supposed to see me do it. And just like I said, then why would I DQ you? And he had no answer and he walked away.
So, wait, was he messing with you or was he legitimately was he legitimately confused?
I don't know. I never would have thought of him messing with me until right now.
That's really funny. That could be a rib that he's been holding on to for all these years.
I find that highly unlikely.
Okay, well... I'm trying to give the guy the benefit of the doubt here.
Also in that building was the famed Little Giant Ladder Match.
Oh, God.
It was for the Real Pro Wrestling Federation. The only real one.
Apparently.
And it was Ralph Ray, who wrestled as Ralph Hickenbottom. This goof who ran the company, who trained at the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy for like 3 days. And then came back and told everyone he was trained by Shawn Michaels.
So, of course, he's using Shawn Michaels' real last name now as a gimmick name.
Yes.
That's a great story by itself.
His kids' names are Shawn Michael and China.
No.
I can't make that up.
Oh, my God.
And his opponent was Serenzio. Who's this dude in, like, camo everything? And it was a ladder match. It was supposed to be Serenzio and D-Ray 3000. But D-Ray said, I'm not coming. It was for the real Cruiserweight title because it was real pro wrestling. So it was the real Cruiserweight Championship, of course.
Of course.
And it was a ladder match. And they had a little giant ladder. Now, for those not acquainted, the little giant is this wonder of a ladder. That's like 97 ladders in one. Or to me, it's one ladder that does 97 things, but I'm not in marketing apparently.
Right.
So it's this ladder that like it has nuts and bolts that snap and like twist and turn, and you can make the ladder like really tall or really short or into an L shape, or like it can make you a spaghetti dinner, like stuff.
That's
like that.
Great.
Now they use this ladder for the ladder match. But no one knows how to work it. For some reason, they don't just set it before the match into the position it needs to be in. But they leave it, like, too low or something. So now they have to actually open up the ladder to make it taller. But no one seems to know how to do that. So it's already weird enough that I'm a referee in the ring for a ladder match. Normally the ref is just on the outside.
Yeah, because you totally need the ref in the ring for the ladder match.
I got bumped. I was in the ring to get bumped so Christian could come out and interfere on behalf of Ralph Hickenbottom.
Christian.
Like a week and a half removed from being the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Christian Cage. Is assisting fake Shawn Michaels to win a ladder match with the ladder that no one could work.
That's great.
So I'm in the ring for this ladder match, and I got Ralph's wife, Jody, was his manager. I got Jody yelling at me, help him with the ladder. I'm like, you think I know how to work this thing? Why didn't you buy a regular ladder?
I'm still picturing this ladder in my head and laughing hysterically.
Oh, it's the one that Al from Home Improvement's on the commercials.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was a thing that happened. There was once a match we were working in Allentown. We worked for Lehigh Valley Wrestling. And they brought in some of the Chikara guys, and one of the matches was Lucky against Vin Gerard. And they did the spot where Vin goes for the sunset flip, and Lucky stops, and Vin pulls his tights down, and his ass is hanging out. Lucky's intention was for his ass to hang out for the rest of the match. Oh, no. They had, like, 4 minutes left in the match. His intention was for his pants to never come back up.
Of course.
So, like, they're working, and Vin's hitting, like, face on fire stuff, even though he was a heel in Chikara 6 miles down the road. And like, it was really weird. Out of nowhere, here comes one of the security dudes. Matt, ring the bell. Like, I'm not ringing the bell for you. He goes, no, ring the bell. And I look up and here comes the guy from the State Athletic Commission walking towards the ring.
Oh no.
So I'm like, ring the bell. The state shut down the match because Lucky's ass was out too long.
Oh, that's really funny.
Like, he told Lucky that he was banned from Pennsylvania for 6 months.
Banned from the entire state.
Whole thing.
The whole thing.
Yes.
Wow.
I mean, obviously that didn't come to pass. But yeah.
Oh man, your ass was out too long. That's it.
That's it. Done over with.
That's it. You're no longer allowed in this state for the next 6 months. But I live here. That's fantastic.
You're gonna have to move.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to. I had the idea a couple months ago for a loser leaves town match. But, like, the gimmick is then they actually have to leave town.
Oh.
like say it's me against you, and the show is happening in Wilkes-Barre, and we both live in Wilkes-Barre. Loser leaves town, and say I lose. I gotta go. It's like, I go back to my apartment, I pack my stuff, and now I have to find a new town to live in. Like, I can still wrestle in Wilkes-Barre, but I can't live
there. You can't live there. That's actually really funny. We need to do a gimmick like that with somebody and just film a whole bunch of vignettes of just them, like, struggling to find this new apartment.
Like, having a hard time finding a job. Yeah. Like, man, losing this match has really changed my life for the worse.
That would be great. We should run with that. All right, guys, I got referee Matt Derline here. We're telling a lot of road stories. Fortunately, we're running low on time for this week, so what we're going to do here is we're going to invite Matt back next week to come back and do nothing but tell wrestling road stories. Does that sound like a plan?
I'll be here.
All right. So we'll definitely see you next week.
You're listening to the Jersey Reign Podcast.
Well, there you have it, guys. Like we said, that was too big for just one episode. So come back next week. Matt Derline's going to be back with even more wrestling stories. Thank you guys for continuing to support us. Please check out the Club Kayfabe Podcast, Talkin' Talkies, and all of my friends' shows, including shows from A Hat, Two Dudes, Brews, and Books, Gold Standard Wrestling Podcast, and all the other awesome allies that are part of this huge Club Kayfabe community we've created for ourselves. Of course, we'll be back next week with another episode of Jersey Reign. Matt Derline will be back. And trust me, there's even more wacky wrestling stories to be told. See you guys next week.